Blog Talk Radio.
Gregor Mendel, he was a monk. He wasn't making liqueurs or champagne, as some monks did in France. He was the father of genetics. And he was an Austrian, and they're very big on science. Of course, there were monks who were making beer and wine and some famous French wineries today had their origin in the monasteries. And, of course, we don't know how much of the good stuff that the monks kept for themselves. Also today, a famous mystery writer, Raymond Chandler. I think a couple of his crime mysteries were set in San Francisco. One of the most notorious Nazis, a lawyer, of course, Austrian also, was born today in 1892, Arthur Sess Inquart. He was the Gauleiter, the lawyer, who ran Holland. He was also believed to be the Nazi leader in the occupied countries who banned the Jews from riding bicycles. And also in Holland, they started what we see here today, these special bicycle lanes along the highways. Ironically, they weren't, the Germans invented the bicycle, but the they didn't have special lanes for bicycles. And, of course, Holland is flat. It's not like San Francisco, which is very hilly. The topography is different. Also, same thing with Copenhagen. And, of course, we have an excerpt on our Amicus Veritas YouTube site of the counterfeit trader where bicycles were used in Copenhagen to block the Gestapo, who were chasing American Swedish spy Ericsson. So go to our counterfeit trader, Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmicusVeritas YouTube, and look up the counterfeit trader, and you'll see how bicycles were used as a weapon by the resistance in the occupied country. Also today, famous American, Stephen Vincent Benet. I think he wrote some poetry. And those of you who grew up like I did, studying Amy Vanderbilt's book of etiquette, born today. The guy who was responsible for one of these income tax internal revenue regulations, I think it's called the Kemp-Roth Act. Senator William Roth was born. I think he was from Delaware originally. Also, a U.S. senator who lost his arm in Italy, Lost part of the use of his arm, and he became a senator from Kansas and also later presidential candidate, Robert Dole. He was not related to Dole Pineapple, I don't believe. And then those of you who watch Jeopardy, a famous Canadian who was born in Toronto, in Kingston, Ontario, and then grew up in, I guess, Western Canada and emigrated to the United States like a lot of Canadians did, Alex Trebek, who runs, who's the MC of the show Jeopardy, which is seen on, I think, the ABC network 6 times a week. Among the deaths today, John Dillinger was shot in front of the Biograph Theater in Chicago in what is known as Lincoln Park, and he was set up by a woman dressed in red. A famous murder ambush by the FBI, and was set up by this woman in red, who's his girlfriend, who betrayed him. John Dillinger was one of those on J. Edgar Hoover's FBI Most Wanted list. Talking about Illinois, Carl Sandburg, the poet of the prairie, who wrote quite a bit about Abraham Lincoln. He was born today. One thing about Abraham Lincoln, and this has come up in an will come up in an interview I'm going to do with some more lawyers. So I'm doing some other stuff besides the legal work that I did for Jay Miller of the ACLU and also for many law firms. Lincoln said at the time, and this is unfortunately a canard that's used today for people who try to represent themselves in court, and of course in small claims court you don't use a lawyer, and in uncontested divorces, but he made the statement, a man who is his own lawyer is a fool for a client. But that's not true today, because more and more people can't afford lawyers or won't afford lawyers or can't or fire the lawyers they have because they're lazy, incompetent, and dishonest and take money and don't do the work or don't do the investigation, the research necessary to prosecute a case. So we're seeing more and more what they call pro se. In fact, we have one woman lawyer here in San Francisco, Susan Petro, P-E-T-R-O, who runs ad regularly, says, be your own lawyer. Help, I can help you help yourself, which is a very good idea. And we're going to interview Susan pretty soon. And you can contact Susan at 586-3066-415 or www.susanpetrolaw.com. It's perfectly legal what she's doing. But there's one type of case that you cannot prosecute yourself, and that is called quitem. That's suing on behalf of the government. These cases are very complicated because they involve oftentimes recipients of government contracts or grants who don't do the work or swindle the money. And so this is another thing we can attribute to Abraham Lincoln, that he's the one that started this during the Civil War, that the Union Army and the government were being sold defective horses. And Lincoln got pissed off and came up with this quitem law, which enabled private citizen, you have to have a licensed lawyer for this. You can't prosecute this yourself. And you, what happens is that you inform the government under seal that within 30 days they either take the case or you get your own lawyer and pursue the case and you get a bigger chunk of the recovery. It's called quitam, and we'll get into that another day. And also, there's one federal case that's on point, and it's never been overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court or SCOTUS. It's called United States versus Onan, O-N-A-M. It's a 1950s case, which says that a citizen cannot prosecute a quitam case unless he is a lawyer, certified lawyer, or hires a certified lawyer, or the U.S. Attorney Justice Department takes over the case, and he also gets a portion of the recovery. So also today, among the events, we're crossing the ocean. In 1298, the English defeated the Scots at a place called Falkirk. The English and Scots were always fighting. And if you remember the famous Braveheart, which is William Wallace, who is the national hero of Scotland, and he fought the English. The King of England at the time, one of the Plantagenets, was called Longshanks because he was so big. He was a brute and a tyrant. In 1775, George Washington assumed the command of the Continental Army. In 1812, Duke of Wellington defeated the French in Spain at Salamanca. And, of course, I don't know why the 1812 Overture is played at the 4th of July. It's nothing to do with the American Revolution, nothing to do with America. Although Tchaikovsky did come to the United States, but I don't believe he conducted the 1812 Overture, which he composed. Talking about Russia, in 1917, Alexander Kerensky became the Prime Minister of Russia, but the communists, Trotsky, Stalin, all these people, Lenin, forced him out, and he had to flee Russia. And later Trotsky had to flee. In fact, Trotsky's grandnephew is Bill Bronstein, who was a former editor of the San Francisco Examiner when it was owned by the Hearst family, or the Hearst Corporation. And another famous aviator today, Wiley Post, made the first round-the-world trip. He later crashed. One of his passengers on a trip to Alaska was Will Rogers, and they crashed I think Newt Rockne was also on that plane. They crashed in Alaska. A lot of crashes during the 30s. And then in 1937, FDR tried to pack the U.S. Supreme Court because it was conservative at the time. He wanted to add, I think, six more justices, and the Senate rejected this court packing. We got a different type of court packing now where they try to get judges appoint people to the U.S. Supreme Court who will follow the political agenda of the president who appoints them. So that always doesn't work, and Teddy Roosevelt found that out. Now, among the things today, political animals are the political animals based on a book that I had written. Unfortunately, it had to be withdrawn because the publisher went bankrupt. This is kind of funny that Calvin Coolidge was known as Silent Cal. In fact, it was Dorothy Thompson who was told when Calvin Coolidge had died, and she said, "Are they sure?" Because he was very taciturn, but he did do the first presidential film, and he was talking. Can you believe that? And we'll probably play that Wednesday, play a clip, but we have to go back in the archives for that. Among the other things that have happened that we were keeping up on the news is one of our whistleblower sources. He's dead now. Nick Rommel, God bless his soul. He was gay in his private life, and his lover, his partner, was brutally murdered by a Canadian who has a strange connection to San Francisco and the homosexual lesbian politics that go on here. Anyway, he was a purser on a Caribbean ship that used to go, ships that used to go down to the Caribbean, and he told us that a lot of these children that are in young girls and boys who are missing are kidnapped for international pedophiles. And there are a growing number of websites that are exposing some of this stuff. In fact, I think it was Walsh, the guy whose son was kidnapped and still missing, who does a TV program. He's done a few programs that included segments on pedophiles who kidnap children. Well, anyway, in the Natalie Holloway case, he thinks, and his sources indicated to him, that she may have been kidnapped and pimped out by the Bandersloop's father, who was a lawyer who also went to jail. He was a judge down there. Aruba is owned by Holland, or the Netherlands, and we found some photos of there were three boys in that family, and of course one is in a Peruvian jail, that's Joran Bandersloop, but he had two younger brothers who put stuff on the web, which was called Pimp. So we have the photos of this. We got photos, and they're on our on this program segment of the photos that go in a sequence. So this may be what is happening. We don't know if that young girl was murdered, or her body destroyed so they couldn't find it, or whether or not she ended up being kidnapped by one of these international pedophiles and be sold into somebody's harem in the Middle East, or into prostitution in places like Thailand, excuse me. So this is what this purser suspects. I also talked to other people in the transportation industry, which go down, travel down in the Caribbean, and they also indicated that this is apparently going on, as well as people who have been in the intelligence services. So it's out there, and it has happened, and there are things like they use these people. When they're all worn out, they kill them and take the, do organ harvesting. Also, there's such a thing called snuff films. They're mostly homosexual, but there have been snuff films using females. And what they do is before they kill them, they have sex with them. Now, there's a notorious film called In the Realm of the Senses. It's an Asian film about a guy who's having sex with this Japanese a woman, and at the point of orgasm, she kills him. So I guess that's consensual. You know, it's crazy, but it was consensual. It's quite a film, and it's supposed to be very erotic, if you consider that erotic. On a public policy issues, I think it's time to what we refer to as the latte leisure class, that these bicyclists in many jurisdictions do not pay for a license plate on their bicycle. They don't have safety devices. They don't have liability insurance if they injure or kill somebody. And also there's a problem for bike theft, that the police, when they find a bicycle, they don't know that's been stolen. They don't know who it belongs to because there's no registration. There's no licensing. So this is extra work for the police. It's more money out of their budget when they could be protecting us on the streets and dealing with other crimes like Occupy, you know, domestic terrorism like that. So we think that it's time to start taxing these bicycles, because if they were taxed and had license plates, they'd be more responsible when they're riding on the road. Right now, they're not. They're arrogant. I hear this from all over the country. In Portland, Oregon, they were talking about requiring people to get rid of their cars, in effect, or not use their cars, and to make as many as 25 trips a day with their bicycle. Excuse me. Still got this cold. But, you know, it's insane. Although Portland is flat, it's not like San Francisco with the hills and other cities that are hilly. But this is where this bicycle agenda is going, and these people are like the French aristocrats before the French Revolution, where they would ride down the street with their horses, and anybody in the way, if they didn't get out of the way in time, they were run down. And there was no retribution for the horsemen who ran down pedestrians in the street. This is one of the things that made the French peasants and the French people very angry, this arrogant attitude, and we are seeing it here in the United States. So, and I think that there are rules of the road in the various driver's manuals, so for people who want to take a driving test and get a driver's license, that there is a section on bicyclists, but the bicyclists seem to ignore it and the cops don't enforce it. But it's, so it's time to bring these people to heel, or in other words, they have a lot of political representation, but there's no taxation. Also, if they put their wheels on the road, they should obey the wheels of the road. If they don't, they should be enforced. And there should be heavy fines. If they don't pay the fines, then their name should go into a data bank, and any tax refund or whatever, any government money they have coming is seized and blocked until they pay the fine. It's the only way to make these people, you got to hit them in the pocketbook. What I refer to as the latte left crowd or the latte leisure class, because these people, bicyclists today, most of our bicycles, 93%, I believe is the statistic, of the bicycles sold in the United States come from Red China. The other percentage comes from places like Taiwan. And so, I don't, you know, we used to have bicycle messenger services, but because of the communications, the internet, and email, the bicyclists, you only see them when they have to go to the library to pick up books. For instance, they'll go to the library and pick up law books for a law firm and then bring them back, because you can't put those on the internet, to do errands around town like that. But and then at night, there used to be the dope dealers who we would see on their bicycles making their deliveries, because the police couldn't catch them with the vice squad because the bicycles went where the cars couldn't. Today, we see bicyclists all over. They go through stop signs. They go through red lights. They're insulting when you reprimand them. They scratch your car sometimes. They break your mirrors. Do all kinds of things that are offensive. And one of these days, one of them, one of these malefactors who do this, these kind of acts, are going to find out they'll no longer be able to ride a bicycle when they won't have a bicycle. People are getting very, very angry, and they're getting fed up with this arrogant attitude that they're special. These bicyclists have special rights, privileges, and exemptions, and they're just like anybody else. The only thing is, as we said, they have representation with the among these spineless politicians, and they don't pay any taxes or any licensing fees or any liability insurance. Now, since we're concerned about the budget, I think this is very practical information from, of all people, Calvin Coolidge. Now, let me find it. I'm a little sore here. That what he said about the budget and is very apropos to today, that we need to realize that government's got to cut back on some of these expenditures. They can't keep doing this, and they can't keep taxing people because the money is not there, and our dollar is being devalued. It's not worth what it used to be, and according to one of the statistics today, nearly 50% of the Americans are near or below the poverty level, and that's the worst it's been since the 70s, when we had Carter, who was incompetent. So, again, this is Mr. O's incompetence, and the people around him. We don't know what the agenda is, but a lot of people begin to realize this isn't, quote, the change that they voted for. In fact, talking about language, which is a hobby of mine, the origin of words, if you stop and think about the political catch-all change, and you look at the result of the so-called change, we see different faces, but the same old situation. Maybe people should start thinking in terms of reform, or a phrase I use for Veritas, reform, renaissance, renewal, and reform. We need reform. We don't need to change the faces and get the same old situation. Same old politics, the same old corruption, the same old pedophilia, nonprofits. Now, and along that line, the Russians apparently have learned from the Americans. After the fall of communism, so-called, what happened was, especially here in the West Coast, the recorder of San Francisco went over to Russia to teach them how to record and set up a land property recordation system. I don't know how successful he was, but also we have these what they call NGOs, non-government organizations, which are some of them are very politicized, and we have these so-called nonprofits. I call them bogus nonprofits or non-taxpaying profits because the people who set some of these organizations up use them to feather their own nests, and it's there's this phrase called doing good, but doing better for yourself. And so I think the Russians have learned from us, from our mistakes, that these so-called nonprofits are really organizations set up by the people who run them to mostly profit for themselves and do very little good work, if any at all, for the people and the programs they say they are trying to promote and to make social welfare available to people who need it. So it's what I call easy pickings. And we'll get into more of that, and we'll have some more excerpts in the book that I wrote on that and what you can do to get accountability from these nonprofits in your own city and community. So we're going to try to find that coward, Coolidge. He always disappears when I want to find him. Here he goes. Calvin Coolidge talks about the relevance of the national budget. Coolidge, what happened?
The country needs every ounce of its energy to restore itself. The costs of government are all assessed upon the people. This means that the farmer is doomed to provide a certain amount of money out of the sale of his produce, no matter how low the price to pay his taxes. The manufacturer the professional man. The clerk must do the same from their income. The wage earner, often at a higher rate when compared with his earning, makes his contribution perhaps not directly, but indirectly in the advanced cost of everything he buys. The expenses of the government reach everybody. Taxes take from everyone a part of his earnings and force everyone to work for a certain part of his time for the government. When we come to realize that the yearly expenses of the governments of this country, the stupendous sum of about $7,500,000,000, we get $700,000,000 is needed by the national government and the remainder by local governments. Such a sum is difficult to comprehend. It represents all the pay of 5 million wage earners receiving $5 a day, working 300 days in the year. If the government should add $100,000,000 of expense, it would represent 4 days more work of these wage earners. These are some of the reasons why I want to cut down public expense. I want the people of America to be able to work less for the government and more for themselves. I want them to have the rewards of their own industry. This is the chief meaning of freedom. Until we can reestablish a condition under which the earnings of the people can be kept by the people, we are bound to suffer a very severe and distinct curtailment of our liberty. These results are not fanciful. They are not imaginary. They are grimly actual and real, reaching into every household in the land. They take from each home annually an average of over $300, and taxes must be paid. They are not a voluntary contribution to be met out of surplus earnings. They are a stern necessity. They come first. It is only out of what is left after they are paid that the necessities of food, clothing, and shelter can be provided and the comforts of home secured, or the yearnings of the soul for a broader and more abundant life gratified. When the government effects a new economy, it grants everybody a life pension with which to raise the standard of existence. It increases the value of everybody's property, raises the scale of everybody's wages. One of the greatest favors that can be bestowed upon the American people is economy in government.
That was Calvin Coolidge, believe it or not, Silent Cal, talking about something that's very relevant to today. And now we'll end with our theme, politics and poker. I hear, again, that the senator from South Dakota may be in the running for the vice presidential spot on the Romney ticket. The last candidate from South Dakota was George McGovern. So we shall see what we shall see and hear. Let's see who's holding a hand in politics and poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen,
How about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, better.
Well, I don't know if we have any Jacks in Romney's pack of prospective picks, but anyway, this is Peter Paul Bozzolo. We'll be back Wednesday, and also we'll have more presidential and political anecdotes. Good night, and go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AMICUSVERITAS YouTube.